I've got an hour, basically, to share with you some thoughts on a question, on a set of issues that are emerging, which I think are going to be significant, at least for the next decade, two decades, in this society, and I think increasingly in other societies, as we confront the question of how do we develop human beings in such a way that we can produce economic surplus that hopefully will be distributed in an equitable and fair fashion. I'm going to describe a set of problems, and then I'm going to try to do it fairly quickly, and then let's go to a discussion. And I think in that discussion, it'll be fairly simple to see how certain principles of the faith actually apply in the concrete. Sometimes with Baha'is, we become so enthusiastic that we use code words to talk with each other. And then when we attempt to talk to people who are not Baha'is, you know, they sense our warm enthusiasm, but they are really troubled as to, well, what does that have to do with what I'm confronted with today? And a Bill Foster euphemism is that what I've stolen the idea from is, it's the cinder in the eye phenomenon. Have you ever tried to talk to someone about something when they have a cinder in their eye? It's not until you help them remove that cinder that they sort of step back and relax and then absorb the message you have. So the challenge to us as Baha'is are to take the principles of the faith and demonstrate their efficaciousness, their power in terms of actual concrete situations. We talk a lot about self-investigation of truth, a great deal about unity, a great deal about the importance of education, a great deal that the work performed in the service of mankind, worship of God, those kinds of things. Well, as I talk about these problems, keep some of these principles in mind, and then we'll come into discussion and ask ourselves applications of those principles and what kinds of solutions might be suggested, near-term solutions. Well, introduction to the whole question of education, corporation, community, new patterns of educational collaboration. Some of you have heard this before, so bear with me. What you have to understand is that, well, as Baha'i you certainly understand it, we're living in a new day and age that is characterized by rapid, persistent, pervasive change. Okay? Rapid, persistent, and pervasive. It moves. The second thing is that change necessarily brings about the breaking of relationships. And so the charge in life is, how does one transform broken relationships into whole relationships? I'll give you a hint that has something to do with progressive revelation. But the point being is that as you look at the consequences of change, whether the relationships be transpersonal, which we would call spiritual, whether they be intrapersonal, the relationships that go to make you up, your various selves, interpersonal, between two human beings, the relationship of an individual to a group, or relationship of groups, or relationships of an individual to an idea. Mm-hmm. Those are all different types of relationships. And what I'm suggesting to you is that one of the consequences of change is that those relationships break. Okay? And what you have to have is a certain degree of consciousness, a certain degree of creativity, and a certain capacity to link with others in order to transform broken relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, we do two things when relationships break. The first thing is to pretend that nothing's happened. So we invest a great deal into masking broken relationships. The problem is that eventually you run out of masks, and also the cost involved in developing new masks every day is enormous, not only in terms of time and energy and money, but in terms of so many other resources. A second response to broken relationships is to say, indeed, they are broken. We must set about the business of transforming those broken relationships into whole or coherent relationships. And obviously that is the tradition of Gnosticism. It's the tradition, it's a counter tradition to any orthodox ideology. People have this notion of constantly evolving, if you will. Now, what does that have to do with corporation community? And I'm going to restrict my remarks to the United States. But in our discussions, we can move very quickly to any other society, and I think you will see the same things at work. we're confronted with broken relationships between people, education, and occupational competence. That is to say that we often have a mismatch of people, lots of human beings, who don't have the opportunity for education, or they are miseducated, and as a result, in terms of having a skill, a profession, a way of an occupation, okay, and being competent in that occupation, we find great disparity. Now, when I use the word occupational competence, occupation applies to very broadly. Anything that you do in life in order to earn your living, whether it be volunteering at Baha'i Hall or whether it be developing crystals at MIT or whatever. Competence has to do with not simply the acquisition of knowledge, but the acquisition and application of that knowledge. And that's something that we don't do very well, okay? Which is why we produce graduates of universities that take them 18 months before they are competent. That is, to apply the knowledge they've acquired to solving concrete problems. So in this society, the issue is becoming increasingly critical that we have a disconnection, broken relationships between people, education, and occupational competence. You can hold that thought there, and I'll call it back in about 15 minutes. Let me move on to the next basic point. We talk about corporation and community. Unfortunately, one of the qualities that God has given us is that we have enormous imagination, and we have found a way to take something that doesn't have a life and endow it with a life of its own, and then forget that we did it. It's extraordinary. We can take an idea doesn't exist in terms of it being living and causing things to happen. Okay, human beings cause things to happen. But what we've been able to do is we've been able to take certain ideas like the corporation, endow it with a life of its own, and then walk around and somebody says, well, who did that? Well, the corporation did that. No, not the corporation. There were individuals in that corporation who did it. Similarly, the notion community. And community is such a powerful word. Concept. Everyone wants to belong to the community. Well, unfortunately, all of you had experiences in which you walked into rooms and people have gotten up and they've said, on behalf of the community, etc. And of course, by simply evoking that concept, community, somehow or another that legitimizes them. And unfortunately, when we falsely endow concepts with a life of their own, it prevents you from investigating. So we have a problem here, and we talk about corporation and community. Both of them are concepts that tend to have a life of their own. So they tend to obfuscate rather than clarify what it is that's happening around the disconnection between people, education, and occupational competence. Okay, let me talk a little bit about the corporation, the idea of the corporation. The idea of the modern corporation is something that really came out of the West. And I won't go into great detail conceptually how one came up with it. But the notion of a limited liability corporation, which is generally what we confront when we talk about corporations, big or small, that was a creation of American legal thought that suggested that you could take an idea, call it a corporation, endow it with a life of its own, and then allow it to behave as an individual enjoying some of the rights described in our Constitution. Okay. And of course, the fascinating thing, as a footnote, is that the legal underpinnings of the modern corporation are derived from those amendments passed to abolish slavery and to guarantee, if you will, equal protection of the laws. Now, there are lawyers here in the room, we can get into a more refined discussion, but it's interesting historically that the notion of a corporation and how that corporation enjoys certain rights, if you will, as well as some responsibilities, in the latter part of the 20th century. It's derived, okay, from a notion of falsely endowing an idea with a life of its own, and interesting enough, in this case, using issues having to do with the Civil War and slavery as a way of defining that. In any case, when society at the turn of the 19th century decided that limited liability corporations would be the way in which we would organize a large part of the economic sector of this society, in short, the argument was as follows. Creating these corporations where you could limit the liability of the corporation was the most efficient and effective way of generating economic surplus, okay, and the most fair and equitable way of distributing that surplus, so that the overall effect would be the leavening of society. That was the deal that was struck. Okay. Now, it's important to understand the history of the idea of the corporation, so that when we come to the latter part of the 20th century, you can begin to get a sense of what's causing corporations and communities to find some way of reconnecting. Now, there is a great deal of debate as to precisely what are the responsibilities of such a corporation. And the debate as to what the proper responsibilities of a corporation are stem from a notion of what is the peculiar function of a corporation. Why do you have a corporation? On one side of the argument, you have very traditional people say the purpose of a corporation is to simply generate economic surplus for those people who own the corporation, and that is it, pure and simple. Profitability in dollars and cents is the only measure of the true function of a corporation. There are other people on this side of the argument who say that that may very well have been the case 100 years ago, but society has grown and become so complex that, in fact, corporations have economic functions, they have social functions, they have political functions, and indeed they have moral and ethical functions. Okay? And the failure to understand that corporations today exercise multiple functions is, in fact, to ignore reality and to encourage a degree of irresponsibility on the part of organizations, corporations, who make decisions the consequences of which have an enormous impact on our lives. So in between these two extremes, you have various public positions that are taken as to what corporations might do in collaboration with communities in order to form new educational arrangements that get back to the connection or missing connection between people, education, and occupational competence. Okay. Hold that idea. Let me introduce the third idea. Okay. The third idea really has to do with lifelong learning and, if you will, human capital formation. I don't like that phrase, human capital formation, but I'll come to it in a moment. First of all, the notion of lifelong learning, and particularly, again, using the United States. If you look at our demography, we are an aging population in general. Okay? Now, that has enormous consequences for what society is going to have to do, what it can do, what it can't do. It also blurs the fact that there are significant exceptions to that general statement of a gradually aging population. But for all intents and purposes, population is aging. What that means is that you can no longer walk around thinking that people are disposable, and that when somebody reaches 55, you don't like them, get rid of them, and you can pick up an 18-year-old and just move on with your businesses or whatever. What it suggests, in fact, is that one's got to think of human beings as renewable, as transformable. And this society is not accustomed to that. We still have this lag in terms of how we've been taught to think and what the reality is. But if it's true that if you have an aging population, it means that one has to look at education and training as a lifelong pursuit, cradle to grave. And it's not simply a sentimental thought, it's an absolute necessity and reality. Okay? Which means one's got to change one's notions of human potential. Okay? Many of us walk around here with notions that if a child hasn't developed and demonstrated a certain potential by the age of 7 or 10 or 15, then it pretty much means that they are going to be tracked and be classified at this level as opposed to that level. Our assumptions of human potential are so culture-bound and so time-bound, it is it's tragic. But the impact of lifelong learning, the impact of an aging workforce, is going to force people to look and relook, rather, at the issue of human potential. Now, human capital formation. The reason I don't like it is that it implies that human beings are objects. Okay? And when one talks about capital, it's generally in terms of money or it's in terms of real estate or whatever. And, so I apologize for using the phrase. I haven't found a better concept to describe it. The point I'm trying to get at is that in this kind of economy, indeed any economy where one allows for private ownership, if you will, some form of capital, if you will, the privatization of capital, when one looks at money or buildings, one immediately says, well, gee, the important thing is to maintain that capital base, either by finding a greater rate of return if you're investing in financial instruments, or in terms of maintaining buildings. Okay, certainly Baha'i Hall or Green Acres is a very good example. If you don't maintain this, it will begin to crumble. So the point being is that everyone understands you've got to keep maintaining it. We don't tend to have that same attitude about human beings. In terms of occupational competence, precisely, okay? But I would say even generally. The notion that the human spirit and human beings are things that require constant nurturing and maintenance. So if in fact you have the need for lifelong learning and the need to maintain, quote, human capital, how does one go about doing it? Well, to a large extent, we've assumed in this country that universities could play a role. And I'll just give you a very quick illustration of what's happened over the last 100 years in higher education that explains why higher education can no longer fulfill that function or is struggling to find a way to fulfill that function. If you look at the history of American public higher education, it really comes from a law that was passed in the middle of the 19th century. And it was a law that said, if a state agrees to have people who will do research and teaching in order to solve the basic problems of providing food and fiber. Okay? If those states are willing to commit themselves to that, then the federal government will give you land and money to build buildings for universities. And that's the history of the American land-grant colleges. The major universities of the Big Ten, Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, I think there's a land-grant college here in Maine. Perhaps it is the University of Maine. I'm not sure. But the point being is that the issues of providing enough food and enough fiber for clothing were of sufficient importance that universities were created and to solve those problems. Now, that went quite well. In fact, one of the ways in which they did it is they developed the notion of county agents. That researchers might research and solve problems in the laboratory, teachers might teach it, but then there was another kind of person who would actually go out to the farm and work with the farmers to develop ways of actually implementing, applying the knowledge that had been generated in universities. So everything worked reasonably well up until the end of World War II. At the end of World War II, you had large numbers of people coming back and asking for higher education. And really from 1950 to 1970, you saw a virtual explosion in American higher education. We created more universities in the space of 20 years than dozens of societies have been able to do in hundreds of years. Now, in the rapid expansion of higher education, something began to happen. Higher education began to turn in on itself. Okay. No longer concerned with issues of food or fiber or the application of knowledge, but they became more concerned with the generation or replication of themselves. Mm-hmm. Why? Because universities are growing so fast, they needed more professors of political science, sociology, anthropology, philosophy, etc. So you found universities spending their time trying to develop new professors. Okay. From a business point of view, they became internally driven in their market and became disconnected from the external market. And this has very serious implications, because why does society spend money for higher education? They expect some kind of return. And what's happened since 1970 is that in this country and various states, people have said, wait a minute, we're spending all of that money for higher education, yet we don't see the relationship of higher education to the kinds of issues that we confront in our day-to-day lives. Now, while issues of food and fiber may not be the most pressing issues for the American public, there are other issues that are equally important, that demand attention, that demand solutions, if you will. And they have to do with health, they have to do with education, they have to do with jobs, occupational maintenance, they have to do with housing, a whole host of issues that we're aware of as we just simply watch television or read the newspaper. But what we have confronted is now a gap, a broken relationship between higher education and the needs of society. And much of what people struggle with today in terms of finding points of collaboration is simply a reflection of this gap that is allowed to grow over a period of time. Okay. Now let me go back to the second point, the whole notion of corporations. If you believe that corporations perform more than economic functions, that they perform social functions, then what do I mean by social functions? Okay. What I'm suggesting is that corporations have a direct impact on how individuals are stratified in a community. Who gets how much money? Who is considered important or less important? What kinds of facilities are available to meet the needs of the community? Those are social functions, if you will. But most importantly, when I say social function in this society, is through money you determine who is important and who's less important, unfortunately. Political functions. Corporations perform political functions because they influence the way in which people decide to participate in a political process, whether they belong to political parties or they're independent. Okay. Who runs for office, what kinds of laws will be passed or not passed. Corporations clearly have interests, and they exercise their power and influence according to their own interests. Moral, the whole notion of what are the rights of an individual in terms of privacy, if they work in a corporation. Does the corporation have a policy on privacy? And how does one exercise that? Do you violate that? The whole notion of what is a safe product, what is a fair way of doing business, the very way in which a business conducts itself in a community will have an impact on the moral climate, if you will. If you accept, therefore, that corporations perform more than economic functions, then one response to that reality is to say, therefore, corporations have a social responsibility, a social obligation. Okay. And it goes like this, that in order for a corporation, in fact, to prosper, it must have a healthy environment. Therefore, it is in their self-interest, enlightened self-interest, to try to find solutions to problems in a community. Okay. Not because of a pure sense of morality, but out of absolute bottom line, if you will, self-interest. That therefore one should be able to measure a corporation not only by how much money it makes, it should be measured by how well it develops its people, and thirdly, how well it makes a positive contribution to a community, to a society. And that furthermore, those corporations that have this notion of public involvement as a duty, as an integral part of their operation, these corporations more likely will succeed than others. Okay. And that's an argument, if you will. But it's that kind of argument that goes to the heart of this notion of corporation and community connecting in order to resolve the lack of connection between people, education, and occupational maintenance. I'll give you a small example. Cedrus, Texas is a town of 1,000 people on the Gulf of Mexico. It is a town that received 100 Vietnamese refugees about 10 years ago. The livelihood of that community was basically in fishing for shrimp. When those 100 Vietnamese families were brought in by the Catholic Relief Service, it set off a microcosm of what we're seeing in the world. The Ku Klux Klan came in. There was violence. The 100 Vietnamese huddled together. It made national news. And parts of Vietnamese were violating fishing. They were overfishing the waters because they didn't know. They didn't speak the language. The Coast Guard couldn't enforce certain notions. The basically white population of Seadrift were very xenophobic. They felt threatened. They saw Vietnamese coming in, and they would sacrifice. The Vietnamese would sacrifice, and within 4 or 5 years, they had pooled their money to purchase a car, etc. The Americans said, "You see, these gooks have come in to take what's rightfully ours, etc." You had the kind of violence. Question is, what was one going to do about that? What's the role of corporations? Okay, who owns some of the large packing plants? Okay, what was the role of the churches? Well, we'll leave the churches out for a moment. But the point being is that a solution to that problem cannot simply be calling the police, or how come the schools didn't teach them to speak English, or how come the Catholic Church just dropped them, parachuted them in, etc. That in effect, the problem in that small community, okay, or the problem of, in some cases, people not having alternative ways of earning a living, an educational system that just didn't seem to reflect the cultural diversity of the community, all of these things suggest that the problems of Cedrus, Texas go beyond any one sector. And that's my basic point, that life is becoming so complex as to suggest it's the public sector, it's the private sector, it's the independent sector. These issues are so complex that they now call for an overall approach, collaboration, if you will, okay? Some kind of unified approach to these problems. Some way of avoiding people pointing fingers, okay? It's the responsibility of that person or that group or this organization, etc. And remember, when you point a finger, there are always three fingers pointing back at you. We tend to forget that, okay, but that's a critical point. Now, one response of large corporations to this notion of lifelong learning, the need to maintain human capital, the lack of connection, if you will, between people, education, and occupational maintenance, is for large corporations themselves to get into the education business in a very serious way. And that's come under the guise of corporate education. At this point, I would say corporate education is maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years old. Basically large corporations. But corporations spend approximately $30 billion a year in terms of education and training. And that dwarfs what is normally spent in terms of higher education, elementary and secondary education. So it is a significant piece of the educational activity in the country. What corporations are doing are they are trying to create new organizations that will allow for the synergism, that will allow for the connections to be made, so that we begin to solve this problem of people, continuing education, and occupational maintenance. And in this respect, that's what I do for a living. And what's significant here is the amount of effort that's going into these kinds of activities, and that we need to take them into account. We just recently dedicated a $50 million structure, dedicated to 38,000 people who work for a company, and 10% of our effort is dedicated to communities where we do business.